Hey, what's up? Welcome to Beefs. Here with your almighty, powerful podcasting psychopath. If you want to send me an email, beefflow04@gmail.com, patreon.com/beastplace. Today, again, a remix. I know, but it's easy and they're quick and I'm lazy. If you hadn't noticed, like, I'll sit here talk about women's racing and not bother to even, like, read one article. I mean, I had in the past. That's kind of the point of what I do, but whatever. So lazy Nick here is going to do, I'm going to talk about, here's a funny thing about, there's this whole series of these things, these early podcasts where I was actually sponsored by a real thing. Now, I did it for free. So, but it was a thing called Sweet Southern Boutique. My sister-in-law did. It's like embroidery, initials on stuff, jewelry, knickknacks, like Pinterest stuff. And, but she only did it on Facebook. I was like, you got to put that on Etsy and all this other stuff, but she didn't want to. So whatever. I'm going to tackle weeks 4 through 7 of OCS. Again, I view OCS in, I think it's like 5 phases, in doc, first 3 weeks, because you don't get to leave. Weeks 4 to 7, because you can't quit. And then weeks 8 and 9, that's like the sort of, it's almost like a story arc, you know, there's an intro, there's like a build up, and then like it's a climax, and then like week 10 is sort of like that repose, if you think of like the story arc. Real quick, in doc, was just hanging out, filling out paperwork. There was one dude that got thrown out for having too much back acne. I saw it was insane. First 3 weeks could be basically like a little bit of culture shock. And for me, it was exhaustion and it was learning, I'm going to sleep instead of making my boots super, super shiny. And then you get your day off. A lot of it is just getting ready to eat. There's where my mind is. Getting ready for the week. You go out to eat. I would eat a ton of junk food. Like I would just go and get a bunch of candy, sleep a lot. I had my inspection camis basically professionally. Like I'd have them pressed, wear them just for the inspection, put them in a place in the locker they wouldn't get messed with, and then do that every week. These things were like cardboard hard. Some dudes, and I've talked about this a little bit, partied pretty hard, actually. They were like bragged about it. They looked hungover, but they were, because I think the first thing we did when we got back is like some kind of light PT. They looked, I mean, they did fine. You know, they didn't have any problems. And then you get into the rhythm of the place. The rhythm is gonna get you. The rhythm is gonna get you. I am not a fearless person. I am full of anxiety and fear. I have to do a lot of courage. Like, I'm a humongously courageous. Like, oh, wow, yeah. That's not really a humble brag or a brag. It's actually like a dig. I have so much fear. I have to do courage all the time. It's exhausting. And as in this period is when every day required a little bit less courage. It was normalizing. No matter, it kind of proves that no matter what situation you're in, it will normalize eventually. In the beginning, and then it just, you know, nothing really new really happened. You just did everything faster and with more gear, more or less. Slowly ramping up to, I think at the end, you had to do the O course with like full OCS gear, which is, I think, like the weapon. I don't even think you had to wear a pack to go up the rope. There was a couple of like, you did a couple of different courses. Less surprises in this thing. The other nice thing about it is in that first 3 weeks, I was underwear, dude. Recap. I wore, long story short, for the first PFT, I've known people for like 3 days. I wear my underwear on the outside of my clothes. But then, Pevsner, He was like the worst witch. He was slow. Last guy out the door. He was the last guy to finish eating. I think he might have been smart about this, actually. He was a smart dude. He was great at PT, or running, basically, because he was small and light. He was put on remedial PT at TBS, and so was I, because I, quote-unquote, looked fat. Even though I was 12 pounds under my max weight, and I was 15% body fat, the max being 18, when he, like, measured me, and my OC, the guy just looked confused. He goes, well, you have a chubby-looking face, so you're on remedial PT. Me and this Pevsner guy would just beat everybody. Eventually, after about a couple weeks, someone talked to, they were like, you got this guy in remedial and there's no point. He's just like blasting everyone. He's basically sitting. Cause we would, you know, we do all this. I would do it so much faster than everyone. I'd have like, for instance, I'd have like 10 minutes. We did a 5 or 6 mile run one day. I finished second after Pevsner in like, oh, I want to say 37 minutes, something like that. We had to wait for everybody to finish. The last person took an hour. So I like took a nap. Like, I might have even actually fallen asleep, because at the time I was so tired all the time. You just nap anywhere. And then, so that was one dude. Then the other guy, this guy Snaith, he was super smart. He was monstrously jacked. Like, he looked like he was a bodybuilder or something. But that actually doesn't translate. You don't want to be, like, overly muscular at OCS. So if you're thinking about doing this, what you want to do is a combination of, probably the best way I would say to train for this is, let's say you're mediocre fitness, like you're not unfit, you're not fat, whatever, because then you do the whole slew. But no. Let's take it from like ground zero. I would say start a year out at least and do a couch potato to 5K. You're not going to find things for 3 mile runs, because they're not common. I think it's a track run, but it's not. The closest distance to that's run commonly is a 5K. So you're going to find all these different programs for 5K. Get on one. Then, once you've done couch potato to my first 5K, get on another program that is like, get my 5K time down and do that. Secondly, lose weight. I don't care where you are. I don't care. You're 3% body weight. Lose some muscle. You don't need it. There's a few things that a little bit of body weight helps, but not much. Not for OCS. Remember, I'm just telling you how to get through this thing. And this thing, anything over about 180 pounds, you're carrying too much muscle. You know, like, for instance, you're like, but muscularity is good. Yeah. Marathon runners aren't big dudes. Secondly, so now you got that done. Running, not good enough. Secondly, you need to be like on a good pull-up system. So 5K training, you need to do the sit-ups, but that's going to take you 2 months to get the sit-ups, for real. Once you train, you see it, easy. Next, you need to be on a pull-up thing, because that's very important for the Marine Corps as a whole, and you'll need it there. And secondly, I would say do CrossFit or something like it, some like kind of circuit training, like ball-busting cardio. But do the pull-ups, like just drop dead hang and we'll do a pull-up. Don't do the crazy kipping. They do like these gymnastic pull-ups that are meant to be like easy. That's not what you want to do. Finally, somewhere in your, so, you run a couple days, you do your pull-ups as part of some kind of circuit training, includes sit-ups in that, in like, I would say every workout. Every workout should include some kind of pull-ups. You know, and then you can do a Fran or whatever. I say CrossFit. I don't like CrossFit. I think it's gay. Like, injury prone. On top of that, it's like for chicks. But it actually is really effective. If you want to lose weight, it works. You just got to be really, really careful. because that Rambo the clown thing isn't funny. Okay, that being said, there's one last piece of this. And the last piece is hike. Just walk. And maybe with like 20 or 30 pounds. So go out for walks. It should be every day. And then start carrying like 10 pounds. Start carrying like that hour walk. You'll be fine. And then that'll get you there. I mean, if you really want to get intense, you'll do like ruck walks. I think the longest ruck you're really going to do at OCS is 5 miles. And that's easy. For real. Sounds hard. It's not. So back to Snaith, huge jack bodybuilder, da-da-da. He was slow. He hated it there. He became the punching bag for everyone. And he was one day, we're sitting there, you know, polishing our uniforms, pressing our boots, and he's just complaining. Like, Kenji, I can't do it. Oh, yeah, he had this lisp. He's monstrous. Dude's like 6'5", 6'6", 6'8", maybe. Bald. I can't do this. I'm almost like a kid with Mike Tyson. I can't do this. I'm like, dude, say you have shin splints. Wait, I don't understand. Bro, if you want out and you can't wait till week 7, tell him you have shin splints.
Okay.
So let me explain shin splints. It's basically there's a muscle on your lower leg that's not your calf that runs in the front of your leg by your shin. Like if feel your leg on one side, there's a bone like on the inside, and on the outside, it's like this meat thing. It's hard to work out. And when you first start running, if you're not, it fatigues faster or something, or like when it gets engorged with blood during workouts, it presses because it's in a fascia. Unlike other muscles, it's encased in something. I think this is a little bit of bro science. All I know is that it like hurts. But it's the muscle. And if you get it, they kick you out. If you can't run without shin splints, you're gone. Here's why it's great. Number one, the only way you know someone has shin splints is if they tell you. There's no test you can do to prove or disprove shin splints. When people complained about them and went to the doctors, they were getting kicked out. So I told Snaith, just say you have shin splints. That way you get out. Now, you might look at it, depending on your moral compass, you might look at this, I'm some kind of evil demon. No. It would have benefited me, actually, to have him stay because he drew so much attention away from everybody else. You could sit there and like lollygag because Snaith is going to do something stupid, say something stupid. Like he asked for information on being declared crazy and what would happen to him if he ran away. It was really weird. Like, this candidate request permission to get information on being Section A or like being AWOL or, oh God, it's not actually called AWOL. It's like unexcused absence, away from, man, I can't remember, but there's like a word the Marine Corps uses for you're not where you're supposed to be. And they're basically like, they're going to arrest you, Snaith. And like I've said before, they don't go hunting you down. Like you're like FBI's most wanted. You're the least wanted. It's just when you get pulled over one day, they're going to be like, oh, there's a warrant for your arrest. And then you're going to spend a couple months in the brig at Quantico while they out-process you. Because they don't want to deal with it. They don't care. They don't really care. But they're also not going to let you just go. So I figure this kid's in whatever. I'm just going to help him out. I'm just going to tell you how to escape. Because it was obvious to me. Obviously, I didn't do it. I spent 9 years. I finished out my contract. So I just think that it was like humane of me to just like, look, this is your way out. Now, my buddy Digger, and I'm not going to use his real name because I don't want to identify him. He was there when it happened, when he did it, when he finally just, because it's not the first time. You have to say it once and they try to do some, and there's no real treatment for it. They try to massage you or I don't know, whatever. They give you a Motrin, whatever. And if you get thrown out, because Digger had some medical issue too, he was getting taken care of. Also, shin splints manifest the same symptoms as micro fractures in your whatever that bone is on the front of your foot. I forget, it's the ulna or the gulna or the Santa Maria or whatever. And Smith is sitting there after he got kicked out. You have to sit like on a special bench or something with a giant smile. The other dudes that were getting kicked out were like crying. So that's my Smith story. This is the time in this period that I like to call the. It's not the it's like the middle of the book. You figure out the games. At first, you're just like, ah. You know, after a while, I just don't care. I was yelling at me. Okay. Now you yelled at me before. I'm used to it now. You figure out what is important, what's not. You know, like, it's crazy. So for the inspection, there's some specific things you had to get right. So here's the ones, like the top five that I remember. Number one, your goatee area. Now, keep in mind, there were dudes that never got to leave because they didn't have to, they didn't get yelled at. They got, like, free time. They weren't allowed to leave the base. But anyway, goatee area. And well, here's how it pretty much went. Sunday or Saturday morning, wake up, PT. It's like wake up, breakfast, PT, maybe some mild BS. Lunch. Immediately after lunch, inspection. After you eat as fast as you can, and after you eat, you go and you shave again. You brush your teeth, mouthwash, and then everybody was like, some guy always had mints. You get the mints. You would, like, we would eat in the chow hall, and then we would go across this walkway. We were allowed to go to the bathroom. You ran over to the bathroom in this barracks, and you did all this. You put a razor and your toothpaste and your toothbrush in your pocket. And you would go brush your teeth and get another shave in to make sure there was no way, because bad breath actually got you if it was bad enough. And I mean, I would do that. I would do brush your teeth, mouthwash, and then have a mint in while I'm waiting for the guy to get to me and still get, like, you could work on your breath. Like, Jesus Christ. The hell? The tip of your, so the goatee area, then the tip of your boot. They're not going to look all. Oh, the other thing is you wear the jungle boots, not the what's called a Cadillac or full leather boot or anything like that. But you make sure that that very tip of your boot is super duper shiny, because that's all they look at. Now, the rest has to be okay. But it doesn't have to be super duper. They don't look at. There's certain creases that gotta pop. The one in front of your trousers and the one on your sleeves. Luckily, we weren't there during the summer. We didn't have to roll our sleeves, which would have been just it because of the thickness of my arms. It was kind of annoying. I wasn't even that big. I don't understand how jack dudes even did it. Next, the bolt head. All right, for gun enthusiasts, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Otherwise, let me explain. The bolt is a part that, like, grabs the bullet out of the magazine and shoves it into the chamber, which is the area at the beginning of the barrel, and then there's a pin inside that that comes out and hits the, makes the bullet go. And this is for, if you know about guns, you're like, why is this guy talking to me like I'm retarded? I'm talking about people that know guns, not at all. But the thing is, when on an M16, when you pull it back, you can open up, there's like an opening that the shell of the bullet or the casing comes out. You can stick your finger in there, and if there's any carbon on there, a little bit, you might be okay. Anything more than a tiny bit, that might be a serious ding. Now, there's automatic fails, and then there's little dings. Like, they might find a couple Irish pennants, but whatever. I Irish pennanted that thing every week for 7 weeks, and they were still finding them. So, you know. Anyway, that thing's got to be on point. The way you do that is normally you got to keep that thing lubed up, but as the week progresses, some guys just wouldn't fire their blanks, but that's no fun. No. I'm going to have the fun part. I'm going to get the fun part. And shooting blanks is fun. So it does give you an unrealistic expectation of recoil. Okay, so what I would do is I would start using less and less stuff called CLP, cleaning lubricant protectant, because what that would do is pull the carbon out of the like little tiny microscopic holes or divots or whatever in the steel. And I would put less and less of that on the bolt head till there was almost none. And then I would just make sure to wipe it real quick right before the thing. I would like go in there with a Q-tip. Okay. The other thing you could do right as you're getting ready to stand in position of attention, you wipe the tip of your boots on the back of your pants and you get like a little bit extra shine. Finally, rust on weapon cannot happen. The most likely place to get rust on weapon is on the recoil compensator or flash suppressor. I think on the M16, it's a recoil compensator. What that means is as the gases explode out of the barrel, there's this big thing at the end. It's like a thicker than the barrel. And on the bottom, it's solid. And on the top, it's like grilled, so that as the gases explode out of the barrel, it sends gases also straight up, keeping the barrel down. Like it helps keep the barrel down. That part tended to rust. That was pretty easy. It's actually pretty easy because we tiny, tiny amounts of rust. Now, you had to know where the rust. I think that's the only place it really, really would be rusty that they would look at. That I remember. I can't remember if they took apart, because I think the barrel might be made out of steel, but the upper receiver is aluminum, so you don't have to worry about that. I think the cover to, what's it called? Man, I can't remember the name of the cover for where the brass comes out. Whatever. I think that one might have, but that one was real easy too. And you just need like a brass brush real quick and it's gone. Those five things are on point. You're probably passed. They're probably going to get you for some kind of minor shaving infringement. Maybe you have bad breath. Maybe there's something slightly wrong with your cover. There's like a little too much starch or a couple Irish pennants. That's what they always got me for. But I didn't get hit in the top five. My weapon was always immaculate. One of the best things that you do at OCS is weapon cleaning time. You get left alone because weapon cleaning time is tons of tiny little pieces. They come out there yelling and screaming. All of a sudden goes, ah! And that piece goes flying off. You don't want that. You get more sleep. You figure out. You become efficient. And because like I said, you only get from 10 to 5, which is 7 hours, which is less than a normal person should get. That's just a couch potato, let alone basically like Olympic level training. Like we should have been getting like 10. That's part of it. You know, part of it is just sleep deprivation. But you figure out how to be super efficient. So when the lights go out, usually when the lights went out, I would read for about 5 minutes from the Bible or from this thing called Rifleman Dodd. Yes, I'm not joking. I actually read from the Bible. And Rifleman Dodd is like one of the most, like, God, who wrote it? Whoever wrote it needs to, like, it was so brutal. Not Rifleman Dude. There it is. C.S. Forrester. Good reads. It is without a doubt, one of the most brutal. Death of the French, I think, is the original name of the novel. Horatio Hornblower. C.S. Forrester also wrote Horatio Hornblower. So in the United States, it was called Rifleman Dodd, Death of the French in England. It is, just absolutely, he is brutal. He like becomes like a special operations dude and enlists these local people in a guerrilla warfare against the French. And they all end up like dead, and he doesn't care because all that matters is victory. It's yeah. But just got to get more, you know, got to get that sleep though. Despite Rifleman Dodd, I enjoyed it. It was like a nice kind of escape, but it was so like, I'm not sure it was a good idea to read it there, because the way that it, the brutality and the just sheer vulgarity of it is kind of affected me, I guess. Like I said, you can't leave yet. And really what they're doing this whole time is you're being evaluated every day in every way. The major evaluations happen weeks 8 and 9 at some point. And dudes are just dropping all over the place. You do Suli 1, which is called, it's a small unit leader evaluation 1. You lead a fire team, which is a 4 people. So you're one of the 4. So that's, you got 3. Standard Marine Corps fire team at the time was fire team leader, and you have an M16A1. Then you have a standard rifleman also with an M16A1. You got a grenadier. He's got an M16A1 with a 207 40 millimeter grenade launcher, which is a, looks like a giant shotgun underneath the barrel. And then one guy that carries a M249 light machine gun, although they call it a squad automatic weapon, or they call it an automatic rifle. What's the difference between an automatic rifle and a light or medium machine gun? The answer is belt fed. That thing is belt fed. It comes with exchangeable barrels. I don't know why they just didn't call it a light machine gun, because that's what it is. No, it's an automatic rifle. Bro, a BAR is an automatic rifle. Has no exchangeable barrels and is magazine fed. This thing's belt fed. And it has, you carry multiple barrels plus gloves. You carry a mitt to be able to change them out. I mean, it's not crew served, but I don't know. There's some reason for that, and I can't remember. You do a hump. I think the first one was 3 miles. I was so scared of it. Still terrified. Oh, humps. Oh. Then I did it. It was like, this isn't too bad. It's just boring. Just walk really fast with weight. And really, you have to walk in step with the guy in front of you. There's actual level difficulty of this, but it's not the end of the world. The Suli 2 thing, getting real back to that real quick. You take a fire team and you lead them on an attack on some, like, you know, enemy position, whatever it is. It could be a hilltop. It could be, there's all kinds of bunkers and defensive positions all over the place. Like it's quite elaborate training facility. It's good. So there's this thing called the Tarzan course. It's essentially, if you've gone on some like corporate, like team building stuff, it's like this weird, like you go zip lining and you got to like walk across this like scary rope bridge, right? I'm terrified of this thing. And I'm like at my capacity. I'm just like, if I have to do this Tarzan course thing, I'm not going to be able to do it. God, please make it go away. It gets hit by lightning. And they're like, you guys aren't doing it because you got hit by lightning. It knocked down some obstacle. We'll do it later. I'm like, oh, okay. They went to rebuild it and they put in some of the obstacles in backwards by accident, and we didn't have time to do it. How about that? I'm like, prayer answered. I remember there was one obstacle I couldn't do. So I just want to talk about it real quick. It's a pyramid of like metal bars, and you had to go, or maybe it was like logs, and you had to go under one over the other. And the whole our platoon does it. They're chilling while I'm still struggling with this thing for like 20 minutes. Finally, the sergeant instructor goes, all right, Kangia, just forget it. Just go. Just forget it. You're fine. It just doesn't matter. He said something like this. You're good enough. Just you'll be a good Marine. Just get go. Here's another thing. I get lucky on the thing called the squiggly. Now this squiggly squigs. I'm going to look this up. I got to get this right. God. If I can figure out how to like, see, I need a Jamie. Jamie, can you look up, what this thing is called? No, I need Wikipedia. There you are, Wikipedia. Wikipedia. No, Quigley. Let's call it the Squiggly. I'm a loser. It is, to quote Wikipedia, the Quigley is a legendary water obstacle that is currently part of the combat course at OCS. Lieutenant Colonel William J. Quigley, a veteran of both the Korean and Vietnam Wars, designed it in 1967. It consists of a long canal with 4 foot, that's 1.2 meters, if you're Celsius, cement culverts submerged in a swampy water. Candidates must immerse themselves and navigate through the Quigley without standing as part of the OCS training program. The Quigley, as well as the combat course of which it is a part, however, is not a graded exercise and it is not necessary for graduation. But it's super famous. I want to say it's uphill too, but that means it flow and it don't remember it flowing. So it must be flat. This is one of the things where memory and reality don't mix, but here's what happened. So that kind of gets the idea. It's, first of all, when we did it, it got pushed. When we were supposed to do it in our training, we couldn't. It was too cold, and it was deemed too high a risk. Even at OCS, they have limits, I guess. So no Quigley for me, but it got warmer. And they broke the ice. So this thing was, I guess it was warm enough for us to do this, but it was like a layer of ice that they smashed up. Well, the dude next to me was a pussy. Pussy. We jump in. And by the way, the water is like maybe waist deep on me. Maybe, and I'm 5'10". Now, when you hit that frozen ice water, yeah, your heart does a little thing. But my heart did, and I always like to go first. Oh, this is, I always just wanted to get the pain out of the way. People are like, no, I want to go last. No, I want to go first. I want to get it done. So I jump, there's two like channels. So I jump in, they're like, jump. I'm like, okay, boom. And I just go. You're not supposed to go fast. You're supposed to do this like as if you're like sneaking into Vietnam or something. I start going and I realize that like all the, and there was all kinds of instructors lining the thing. They're all running the other way. I look back and this guy is just flailing in the water like a drowning victim. Again, all you have to do is stand up. This is the same dude that got on my helo in Haiti to do a recon and just got silent. You're supposed to talk to us, dude. You're the infantry guy. We're just going to fly in a circle once or twice. Then we got to go. Because if we just circle, they're going to know we're coming. Same dude. I'm not going to give out his name because, I mean, he definitely isn't listening to this. He was goofy. He was a nice enough guy. Actually, just afraid of water and airplanes. So Marine Corps. Air, sea, land thing, I guess. 1 out of 3 ain't bad. He once, when we were at Gettysburg to do a battlefield study of the Battle of Gettysburg, which is actually super interesting, by the way, because we got all these like historical looks, and he was like, talk about how like we did tourism there from the point of view of, like, if you point the cannon this way, you'll kill more people. It's pretty cool, actually. Even though, like, the Karn is there and all that, like, yeah, it happened 150 years ago, whatever, they died. So this dude, we were there, and it's, like, all officers, and I think there's, like, three enlisted personnel, but they had to park the buses, and we were about to start eating, and he goes, shouldn't the enlisted eat first? Because normally they do. It's, like, and the guys in charge were, like, you're taking that rule and messing it up. Shut up. I'm like, God, you bro. Anyway, the same dude, I guess he couldn't swim or whatever, but and this water is painfully cold. I just want to get out of it. So I just start moving real quick. And as they're running towards him, because I guess they were trying to get him out of the water, they couldn't figure out what to do. So they just stopped training, except for me. They're like, you keep going. So I just was like, okay. I put the rifle up, and you have to submerge your head repeatedly. Those, when they talked about those four foot, 1.2 meter culverts, they're like tunnels and they're entirely submerged. So, and they only talked about the width. They're like maybe two people long. There's like five of them at least. There's a couple obstacles you have to go over. There's another couple obstacles you got to go under. I went through this thing at top speed. I was like basically swimming full blast. I get to the end and I start going real hard at this obstacle course. I get about a third of the way through and I go, wait a minute, no one's watching. And since I have no integrity and no discipline, I was like, I did all the obstacles. No, I did have integrity. When I was at OCS, I was worried about survival. For me, it wasn't how good can I finish. It was, I need to pass. Like, imagine a high school kid that is like desperately trying to get D's, or a college kid that's like, C's, come on. That was me. Not because I necessarily would do that well, because I was that scared of, I felt so inadequate. You know, I didn't feel like I really belonged there. So I had to try like super hard. I actually didn't finish. I finished somewhere in the middle. But my whole thing was, I need to pass. I don't give a crap if I'm number one from last, I need to pass. And by the way, the guys that were like the number one graduate, not all of them. One of them went, and again, I can't remember the Marine Corps term for this. UAE? No. Unauthorized absence. UAA? Can't be right. Unauthorized absence. No, UA. That's it. He went UA or AWOL to you, you normies. But some of them were good people too. The number one PT guy was a real cool dude. So I meandered through the rest of this obstacle course. Again, I went through all the obstacle course. Instead of running real fast, I jogged. My buddy Digger actually caught me at the end, goes, Jesus, Kanjia. I was like, I don't care, bro. I went, and actually, because Digger finished so far ahead, the next guy behind him was like another 20 minutes. It was me and him in the squad bay by ourselves. We both like took a nice long hot shower. I think we got like our stuff in the washer, like into the dryer before anyone showed up. You went through uniforms a lot. Like, you had four uniforms, three workable, and you were constantly washing. And they still, you know, I talked about the fire team thing, like M16, the fire team leader gets a bunch of tracer rounds. You know, the ones like when you see a gun shoot and you can see the bullet to direct fire. Him and the rifleman get bayonets and the other two guys get K-bars. So they still actually... there are combat weapons given out, like hand-to-hand combat weapons that are still handed out. Basically, like daggers. You want to go D&D? Daggers and spears. So, that's cool. Oh, and yeah. I love the 249. I'm going to buy me one. You can get them, not off, obviously, full auto, and I don't think you can get the belts, but I'm going to own one. They're a measly $5,000. Oh, and I kind of missed something here when I talked about that Sully One thing. It's so what does that mean though? What does leadership mean? What do you actually have to do? It basically comes down to this. You're given an order, you're graded on your ability to understand that order, then take that order and give the parts that you need to give to your team. So communicating that order to your team and then getting your team to the actual movement and execution of that order, controlling your team as they go on and they start to make mistakes and stuff and you sort of bring them together. So that's pretty simple. We did a ton of drill. We practiced it a ton. I was okay at it. It's kind of fun. But I failed the exam because I left everyone in something called, not port arms, in a weird position. Anyway, I went to see the office, you know, my commander about it, and he was like, it's drill, you failed. I failed by 1 point. He's like, you failed by 1 point, it's drill. Whatever, man. Just don't fail anything else. And I don't think I did, and that was that. Then my buddy almost fights an SI, one of the sergeant instructors. Obviously not really, but I don't know, he like messed with him. I can remember what it looked like. My buddy was on the ground, kind of like in a don't hurt me sort of like, almost like a dog's like I give up position. This isn't trying to be mean. Love you. I'm just remembering. And this guy, like, because there's, yeah, like in a physical fight and out in the real world, that wouldn't have been a contest towards my buddy's favor. But in that moment, they just have like daddy power, older brother power, whatever. I think he wasn't paying attention or he taught whatever. But anyway, the sergeant instructor like takes off his belt and his cover goes, takes off his rank insignia and goes, you want to go? Like, he's like, woo! So that was pretty fun. But my buddy, like, because I know I wore my underwear on the outside of my pants. My buddy, though, he's like, no, I would have kicked his ass. And I stood up to him like, no, you. Oh, I know. I remember now. The SI took off his belt and hat cover and he handed it to this dude, put on the belt and cover. And then he tried to give this class, but he did it kind of in a funny way. And the guy didn't like it. Here's some random thoughts. There's no doors on any of the stalls. You try to keep yourself clean, especially your feet. For real. Blisters are monstrous. Stretch when you get a chance. Some guys did extra workouts, but I could barely hang on. Barely hang on. Here's some inside radio for y'all that are listening. If you don't want to hear inside radio, thanks for listening. If not, this is about the time I was finally really getting these guys on like Google Play. And I used to put this on SoundCloud. I don't anymore because I was getting like 3 listens, like 3 downloads on it. And when I was getting 10 on iTunes, I was like 30% or not, well, 13 total. But when I started hitting like the 20s and 30s, I'm like, this isn't translating. It's not growing. This iTunes things is growing. And and the thing about it is I've got listeners in Norway, Romania, and Germany, and some other random countries. So that's pretty cool. Also, what's pretty cool is not on my listening. Once you set this up, the RSS feeds and stuff, it's just automatic. And I don't even know where it all is. Like, I couldn't tell. I don't even remember all the places. It's in like 10 or 15 different podcasting. Like, it's on Stitcher. I don't know if it's on Spotify, but I'm not sure I'm big enough to get them on Spotify. Probably should look into that. I probably will. But yeah. But it's on iTunes. That's like the number one. In fact, let me look. iTunes is pretty much it. And Google Play. Yay, one more download since the last time I looked. Yeah, Apple the Apple Podcast thing is most. Number two is Google. Number three is whatever other is. Then Stitcher. Then well, that's weird. And apparently iTunes. I didn't even realize I put it on iTunes. CastBox. Cast, I keep meaning to do live. And I keep like for like just not this time. I'm not this timing myself to death with that. I probably should go ahead and do that. All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Inside Radio, Good Radio part of this. I like talking about that. I don't know if y'all like hearing it or not, because I love hearing it when like on Rogan and on The Herd, when he starts talking about like, oh, we do this and we do that. All right. And again, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Love to love you, baby. Ooh. I can't sing. See you next time.